Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being part of the show. Thanks for keeping the wind in the sails of the Corolla Pirate Ship so we can keep doing this stuff. And, check out drdrew.com if you would be so kind. I'm doing a daily streaming show now usually around noon Pacific, where I take your questions as they scroll up on Facebook Live and Periscope and Twitch and Mixer and all that stuff. We're sort of streaming out all over the place. And then on the weekends, do a show called Ask Dr. Drew, where I take live phone calls, much like what I'm about to do here right now. But that is live. This is obviously a recorded podcast. So if you don't get in today and you want to be part of a live interaction, look for those shows on Sunday afternoon Pacific time. We're generally doing them every week. And all the other pods at drdrew.com, we appreciate you checking that out as well. Let me get to my callers. I believe this is Susan. Is that you, Susan?
Dusan, I believe.
Dusan. Oh, Dusan. Sorry. I thought it was literally thought it was a mistype up there. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I had a question. Yeah, I never heard of you. I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I never heard you or Adam ever talk about the different types of therapy or different types of, like, I'm trying to find a therapist for my issue, but I never could understand, like, the different types and what I need, or I don't want to be just, you know, jumping from therapist to therapist. I want to find something specific for what I need.
Right. I talk about it a lot on those live shows, by the way, because people are asking always specific questions about that stuff. But so let's get into a little bit. The one thing that the research shows clearly in terms of the benefits of therapy, in other words, what is it about a given therapist that increases the probability that that professional is going to be effective, have good outcomes? And most of the research shows that the necessary ingredient that distinguishes someone who is effective versus not so much is deep empathic attunement. So no matter what kind of therapy is being used, to have that empathic, attuned other person in the room with you seems to be the sort of secret sauce. The magic ingredient that makes treatment effective. And that has categorically been my experience, so I'm not surprised by that finding. Now, that still doesn't mean that just empathy is all you need, right? You need a certain kind of treatment. And there are many treatments out there now that are so-called evidence-based. And so let's just talk about not just the treatment but also how to navigate the system. Generally speaking, the way – no one ever does this, but the way it ought to be done, the way it should be done properly is you first realize you're having symptoms. If those symptoms are causing you difficulty functioning, which is sort of the threshold between, you know, just being miserable or having the blues and really there being a medical problem, trouble functioning in work or school, relationships, your cognitive functioning, your legal functioning, your work function, all those areas, school functioning, something's not going quite right and you have some symptoms, that is a marker for a medical treatment. I think you should always start with your primary caretaker and have a medical evaluation because I cannot tell you how frequently psychiatric symptoms are the presenting manifestation of medical problems. So the first thing is to rule out a medical problem. Then have that – ideally, because again, one of the other problems with mental health services in this country is who do you go to? How do you know what's good? How do you know what's not good? It's a pretty random process. I actually spoke about this at length yesterday on a podcast called Whiskey Ginger with Andrew Santino. You like Whiskey Ginger?
I love that show.
Andrew's
a very funny guy.
He is very funny. He's a very good interviewer too, so we get into some heavy stuff. And so again, you can hear more about that on Whiskey Ginger. And so then, in my mind, the way to do this properly is that primary caretaker refers you to a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist then does a diagnostic workup and a medical psychiatric workup and comes up with a framework of diagnostic impressions to help us understand what's going on with you. One of the things in medicine is if you don't have a diagnosis, you don't have a treatment. The treatments that we use are studied in the context of a particular diagnosis. So if the treatments are applied without the diagnosis, you are not likely to have a good outcome. So first and foremost, is there accurate diagnosis and is this an evidence-based treatment for that diagnosis? So proper diagnosis and treatment. Then that because psychiatrists are physicians, they should make a decision as whether or not pharmacotherapy would be appropriate. Then ideally that psychiatrist will refer you to the type of therapist you need. Cognitive behavioral therapies are very effective these days. dialectical behavioral therapies for people that have personality issues, emotionally focused therapies for couples and people that want a sort of a longer-term exploration, have difficulty accessing feelings and regulating emotions. You may be referred specifically to Mutual Aid Society, peer-based things, which are evidence-based treatments, and they are free and they're on every corner, things like AA and 12-step, that kind of thing. Then there's sort of many, many other categories out there. Like if you, say, fail your pharmacotherapy, there might be transcranial magnetic stimulation where they use magnets to raise the chemicals in the region of the brain associated with depression. Extremely effective therapies with almost no side effects. Or are you going to be sent for mindfulness? Are somebody going to train you at mindfulness? Or do you need physical rehab and just get yourself mobilized? There are all kinds of ideas about how to optimize mental health intervention. Do you need vocational rehabilitation? Should you be changing your work? Are there problems in your relationship where you need to have somebody come in and really sort out what's going on interpersonally or in the family dynamics? So there's a lot of ways to approach these things, and the professional should be making the decisions. The individual trying to navigate this, you can see how bewildering it would be, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense for all that?
That makes sense, yeah. Specifically for me, the trauma as a child with the physical abuse and browbeating and neglect.
All right.
Both parents, but mostly from my dad, because I went to therapy before, and as I was sitting there, kind of processing through my mind, thinking about, you know, going back to anticipating the beatings, you know, waiting for my dad to finish off with my mom and come to us, my sister and I, and wait for our beatings and stuff. I was thinking, you know, like, I was kind of scared for my mom because I would hear her shriek and scream, and he would, you know, verbally abuse her for a while, and then he would, you know, hit her a few times, and the whole anticipation of listening to her screaming and shrieking.
Horrible.
Being abused, and then come to me and my sister in my room, we're sitting there cowering by our beds and crying, and, you know, just, you know, we're small children, you know, we're just traumatized by that.
Horrible.
You know, now from that I have an, you know, eating problem. You know, every time I need comfort or anytime I feel anxiety or emotion, or anything comes up at all, I always go straight to food and just comfort myself and soothe myself with food.
All right. So that's the biggest thing.
Right.
There are eating disorders, and the eating disorders are often associated with trauma, and that may need a specific treatment. Again, it needs a specific evaluation, a specific treatment. Clearly, you need what's called trauma treatment and trauma-informed care. Things like EMDR and neurobiofeedback would be very important in your overall treatment.
Okay.
So, you know, so you want somebody that knows about eating disorders and somebody knows about trauma and has specific trauma therapies offered, okay?
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm sorry you went through that. Nothing about that is okay, and no one deserves to go through that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Take care. I'm not sure. Gary on line 5, is line 4 gone, or is that actually line 5 that's up there?
Take a shot at it being line 5.
All right.
I'm looking.
Salvador, is that you? No, it is not. Hi, what's your name?
Daniel.
Daniel. Hey, Daniel.
Hey
there.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I'm just wondering, trying to get your take on medical marijuana.
What about it?
Is it good? Is it bad? What's your pros and cons on it?
It's neither good nor bad. Treatments are neither good nor bad. They just are or are not effective for given diagnoses. So make sure you see a properly trained, licensed mental health professional. And once you have a diagnostic assessment, ask if cannabis might be useful in the treatment of whatever it is you're dealing with.
I use it in the place of pain medicine for an amputation that I have, a below knee amputation.
You're looking for pain medicine?
No, I use it in the place of pain medicine to keep from using pain medicine.
Right. Are you using anything else besides cannabis?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir.
Okay. And did you used to be strung out on opiates?
No, sir. But I've had a few issues with them before when I had to stop taking them. When I first was starting to have the surgeries and everything. So it was just a decision to me that there was something better for me than taking those or where they could have led. You never know.
How long were you on them for?
Oh, about like 6 months.
Okay. So, yeah, cannabis, much preferable to opiates. So if that's helping you, again, you don't treat yourself. You work with a professional to help you manage it so you're not using it inappropriately. But I've always said I'd rather treat somebody on cannabis than on opiates. And so if that's helping you have chronic pain and that is a significant – but there may be other things for you to do out there that are sort of better. You should essentially – with chronic pain like that, you should have sort of a toolbox. You should have a series of different things that are going at it from different ways. There shouldn't be just one thing that you're using. One thing oftentimes gets to escalate and sometimes makes the pain worse. So think in terms of a toolbox and you might see a pain specialist about that. So after I was on the Adam Carolla show, the ACS show, the main flagship of this here organization, got a lot of feedback on the C-SPAN presentation I did, the thing I did at the White House about our homeless situation and the mental health crisis that's causing people to – I literally see people dying in the streets as they drive to work every day. And as a result, I've got a lot of calls from the Washington area, you know, D.C. press. Are you serious? Are you going to run for a governor? You're for a congressman? You're going to take on Adam Schiff? And like I don't want to. Let me be super clear about this. I do not want to do that. At least not now. But I feel like things are so desperate here in Southern California that I have to do something to get our representative to govern. For instance, there are several things that we need to do immediately. We need to lift the IMD exclusion, which is this exclusion of resources since the 1960s that Medicare and Medi-Cal have maintained that have prevented any access to resources for the treatment of the chronically mentally ill that need custodial care. They just exclude it, which is ridiculous. We need to lift the IMD exclusion. I'm calling on Congress to do that. Number two, the infrastructure here in Southern California is crumbling. I swear to God, I'm going to take a horse into work because it's better than running an automobile where the roads are more suitable to a horse. Don't you agree with me?
I absolutely do.
And it's ridiculous. And by the way, I just saw today that Uber has finally got their drone up and going, and they're expecting to have the service in place by 2023.
You've been hot on that for years.
I'll be customer number one, I swear to God. And I don't care how dangerous it is, just to flip off our government, to float over them and the horrible catastrophe they're creating here in our streets.
Well, let's set aside the infrastructure, which I agree is absolutely abysmal.
Yeah.
Isn't it demoralizing every Christmas for those 2 weeks when Los Angeles shuts down and you can get places in a reasonable amount of time?
Right.
Seven miles takes 20 minutes as opposed to 60.
Roads working the way they're supposed to work. Yeah. But the problem is I start noticing more potholes.
True.
Part of the country that does not have ice has potholes. How is that possible? We don't have cold. We have some wet once, 2 weeks a year. And we have more potholes than I see in Boston. Give me a
break. It's got to be about the sheer volume of cars using those roads.
It's the sheer neglect of the roads.
Yep.
It's the neglect. There's a pothole. It's almost become a sinkhole out in front of my own house in Pasadena. But all right, you neglect the roads. And the point is infrastructure is a catastrophe. The IMD exclusion is a catastrophe. There are so many things that need to be governed. I want to know a little bit more. I would start to look over at HHS and what's going on with FDA and the approval process for drugs and how we go about that and whether the government can help with that. I mean, there's so many things to be done other than worry about politics. So the point is, what came out of the ACS show was me just going, I think I'm going to run for Adam Schiff's position. That was me just ruminating because I happen to live in his district and my district is a catastrophe. And so I feel like I have to do something. I don't want to. I do not want to. Let me be super clear. I do not want to do it, although I find it a great honor and a great privilege to be working in the federal government. That'd be a fascinating thing. It's not good for me right now. Maybe in a few years or something I would consider it, but not now. And the problem is, as I drive by people that are dying on the sidewalk right in front of me, I'm compelled. I'm morally pushed to action to do something, but – yeah, I'd rather not. That's the bottom line. That makes
well,
sense?
As someone who is politically interested but not active, I will be the first one to sign up as a unpaid volunteer to help with anything.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't.
You get what I'm saying, though, right?
Yes, I do. Just, oh my goodness, you make one wrong turn somewhere near
wrong turn. There's no wrong turns. It's everywhere I go.
Well, that's
forget the wrong turns. The wrong turns. Oh, that's just
well.
Ridiculous.
Then you get into absolute just.
Oh, just Sodom and Gomorrah. It's just ridiculous. But what I see everywhere and saw tons of this morning just driving in here, people dying of meth and dying of opiates and dying of schizophrenia and dying of infections that are being unattended to because the patient doesn't want treatment, doesn't want treatment, can't touch them. Their legs rotting off. Guy's legs rotting off. I saw it this morning. Leg rotting off. Oh, you can't touch him. Not until he's unconscious.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. So I would also urge us to come up in this state with some sort of mandate for psychiatric directives. In other words, once people get into these conditions where their brains aren't working right, the laws don't let us do anything. So what you have to have is much in the same way we have medical directives to direct doctors on what to do medically when somebody's brain isn't working right. When our brains stop working because of an infectious sepsis, we are directed to do breathing machines or not do breathing machines, tube feeding food, not do tube feeding foods, tube feeding interventions. Same thing needs to be with psychiatry, which is when any psychiatric illness is made, we should have a template that is universally mandated for all doctors that the doctor reviews with the patient saying, hey, you have an illness that can decompensate. And when you decompensate, you will not be thinking right and you will not understand what's happening to you. You will not see the consequences of your illness and you will resist care. In that setting, what would you like me to do? A, deliver care. B, deliver care that doesn't include some sort of mandated environment of care. There's all kinds of ways we could approach it. We need to have that. We need to have the directive for psychiatric illness just the way we have it for medical illness. The fact that we don't is bizarre. Josh, what's going on?
Hello, sir. Well, first, I've been listening to you since poor man days.
Wow.
So going way back.
Way back.
And, so right on. You guys are great. I was hoping to get on with you and Adam sometime, but anyway, I was just curious about. You've been talking about mental illness a lot, and then there's the whole gender issue. I know that's a touchy subject for everybody, but with everybody APA and the AMA jumping on board, is there any way we can slow it down and get more information before we go all the way off the deep end?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but I will say that the project of science is to constantly refine and change. And what is axiom today is likely going to be, either completely untrue or modified or something different in 10 to 15 years. I mean, just look at how we look at diet these days and all the changes that are happening rapidly there. So I've been chanting about this notion that there are no headlines in science for 20 years. It makes me furious when the press reports some finding as though it's a shattering headline that's changing everything. No, it's just a finding. And it needs to be reproduced many, many dozens of times, maybe hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll incorporate it into our thinking depending on how it fits with the currently available wisdom. So the idea of things being just saith the Lord is wrong. That's not science. You got to be always prepared to adjust. There's best practices based on currently available evidence. That's how it should be looked at. And that evidence should be evaluated and everyone should do their own evaluation of that evidence if they can and then proceed. So
– Right.
And you were asking about –
It seems like with our laws in California and Massachusetts and in kind of the woke in those areas, there seems like they're passing legislation that should maybe not quite be there yet. Kind of the school system stuff, the SOGI stuff. I don't know. Just seems like a lot really fast.
Yeah. Well, the government, as always, overreacts. That's just the way they do things. They overdo things, right? And then it's hard to change it once they have things in place. And the things that are in place are very sort of fiat. They're not nuanced. And that's the nature of government. I think the one thing that would concern me if I were you in Canada is mandated speech. Mandated speech has a
– Yeah, absolutely.
Mandated speech has a nefarious history. That's all I would ask everybody to look at. Please look at the history of – political systems where there has been mandated speech, but what follows is not pretty. And so that's my greatest concern about what's going on there, Canada.
Yeah, that's one of the issues with it that worries me is, I don't know, I work in a school district down here and all the restrooms are putting up all gender and it says all gender as opposed to just saying restroom. I think that would be best is just say restroom and then you know, you can decide whatever. But yeah, the mandated speech thing is absolutely scary. It's the scariest thing I think I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah.
That people don't seem to be bothered by it. It's like,
Well, and that's usually, that's also the way it goes typically, too. I mean, you might want to read the Gulag Archipelagos and see how that went historically. And, you know, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it has a tendency to, it has a tend, the patterns tend to kind of play themselves out repeatedly. So yeah, I that's my greatest concern. It is not, is not what's the appropriate way to treat gender issues. What's my concern is the government's involvement in the mandating of speech on any issue. On any issue, then
yes.
Is that really the role of government you want? I don't know.
Let me ask you this.
how do Canadians see that? I mean, I know how we come from a heritage in this country of wanting limited government. The whole history was about casting off the yoke of government, and we have slowly sort of creeped back into more and more and more and more government. Does Canada have a similar feeling, or do they want that kind of engagement and you know, involvement of government?
Yeah, I think a lot do, but you know, they get drowned out. The voices get drowned out by the loud ones, right?
And the loud ones want more. They want the government. There's not a sense of see, it's so different here. I don't know how that works. You know, here it's a union of states, right?
And so yeah, I'm in Orange County. I don't know if.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that. Didn't you say something about Canada?
But he did, but I think he was just referencing the Jordan Peterson stuff.
But it's been, you know, Canada's kind of spearheading, and California's kind of spearheading it.
I see.
You know,
California. So. You know, California's a mess. California just look at the streets.
Absolutely.
Look at the streets. And, that's all you got to know. That's all you know.
Yeah, Penske Corolla 2024, right?
All right. I don't know about that. All right, Josh, thanks for the call.
Oh, I know.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
You got it.
Bye. Hey, Drew, this happened after you were on the Adam Carolla show recently, but right. Did you see, if not the whole show, did you see some of the clips of Ricky Gervais doing his Golden Globe monologue and stuff like that?
I did. I kind of watched bits of it. It did not engage me, so I wasn't paying that careful in attention. My only reaction to it really was it seemed old-fashioned. It seemed like we're past that now. That people don't really do that. But you can't hold an audience with that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think personally that the whole model of those award shows is kind of going the way of the dodo bird.
I think so.
It's just it doesn't.
Although certainly one thing I learned is that if you are on triple therapy for HIV, that seems to be a primary audience because there were tons of HIV treatment there commercials. Which, by the way, were very inspiring, by the way. Seeing people that would live with HIV for 20 years, as somebody who worked in that field for so long when we had nothing, oh my God, it's just you can't imagine how
hearing you talk about the early days of that as someone who wasn't really even around. I mean, I was maybe alive, but by the time I was old enough to understand what that was, the epidemic had long since passed.
Well, and everybody's dead. Everybody's dead who was actually witness to it, except the caretakers like myself. And now to be able to turn it into a chronic illness like diabetes is just incredible. It's so incredible. I was deeply moved by those commercials, but damn, there were a lot of them. Well, you're taking care of your health. You do everything right. But what about the what ifs of tomorrow? It's time you think about that. The health conscious have overpaid historically to subsidize those who are less health conscious. That's just how insurance works. I want to introduce you to Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates for people like you for their life insurance. Hey, you exercise. Health IQ is not just a lead generator. They take the customer through the entire process of applying, and the policy is underwritten by one of our top insurance partners. But these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. They won't be found anywhere else, and you must qualify. You must be really paying attention to your health as much as you say you are. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/Drew. Again, that's Drew, not Dr. Drew. And you can take the proprietary Health IQ quiz. Depending on your score, as well as other related qualifying factors, you can save up to 41% on your life insurance premiums compared to other providers. Again, that is healthiq.com/Drew. Let them know we sent you. And you can start the process with that Health IQ quiz. There's no commitment. You'll learn even more about potential opportunities to be rewarded for your commitment to living healthy. Once again, that is healthiq.com/Drew.
Well, it is time to turn it up with your new favorite podcast, Expeditiously with T.I. here on Podcast One. Join the rapper, entrepreneur, family man, activist as he bridges the gap and sheds light on important social topics and eyebrow-raising dialogue that might make you want to pull your dictionary out. Download new episodes of Expeditiously with T.I. every week on Apple Podcast and at Podcast One.
Hey, everybody, the Corolla newsletter has arrived at CorollaNewsletter.com. You get highlights from the week, behind-the-scenes stories, discounts, deals, and exclusive videos of the gang you can't get anywhere else. Plus, when you sign up at CorollaNewsletter.com, you'll be automatically entered to win a trip to Los Angeles to watch the big game with Adam Carolla, none other. So sign up for the newsletter today, and you and a friend could be coming to the car museum to watch some football with Adam. Get it on at CorollaNewsletter.com. Zach, what's going on?
Hey, I was calling, my sister has, been, alienating her husband's side of the family from, like seeing her kids kind of happen. She has three kids and ever since she, got like, it's been a slow progression, but, and every time I ask her about it, she gets really defensive and then she kind of makes up some half-assed excuse of, reasons why she doesn't let them be involved in their lives. And I was wondering if there's anything I can do to help out the situation.
Well, I would need a lot more information. What does she say is the reason?
It ranges. It changes every time too. It's like their house is dirty, which she's not a great homekeeper herself. It could be things like, his side of the family is extremely nice, good people. His mom is like in early childhood development and everything too. And so every so often she might suggest something like, he's hitting this milestone or something like that.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
So why don't you ask her that head on? Do you feel somehow defensive when she has advice for you?
She does, and she's expressed that. But at the same time, they didn't even go over to see that, and they live in the same town as my family and everything like that. They didn't even go over and see his side of the family at all. They just kind of made up excuses, and it's baffling to me.
All right. The one thing you can do is focus on what it means to the kids to be deprived of their relationship with their grandparents.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's what bugs me the most.
And just express that. Just stay right there. And that this is something that, yes, you may not like, but you're actually depriving your children of an important part of their family and their heritage and people that they should know and who love them. And so I would just forget the reasons and focus on the kids, what the kids are losing as a result of her behavior. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. You got it.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. This is Andrew. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
I'm good. What's happening?
One, I wanted to thank you. Because of listening to you and Adam for many, many years, I was able to realize finally my alcoholism, seek treatment. I'm in 12-step.
Great.
A therapist and a psychiatrist. And because of you specifically, and you're talking continuously about it, I was able to get my psychiatrist to add Neurontin to my regimen, my treatment regimen, in addition to supplement my naltrexone to curb my cravings and help with my anxiety as well.
Oh,
so thank you for that.
That is the way it's supposed to be done, Andrew. That is the way it's supposed to be done. You're supposed to see a specialist. They're supposed to include Mutual Aid Society. They're supposed to give you medication-assisted treatment for your addiction, which is the naltrexone, and then some of the post-acute withdrawal phenomenon and whatever issues you're managing when your brain is not quite right yet. Neurontin is a very effective way to do that. So good for you, man.
And it's been great as a supplement for my day-to-day anxiety along with my Vibrate as well. So I've established a pharmacological regimen that has really helped augment my sobriety program. Cool. So thank you for all your help with that.
Congratulations.
The reason I was calling is I wanted to see, I've got a girlfriend that's bipolar, certainly on the much more leaning towards the mania side. And it's been hard for me as we started living together to get her to be compliant with her medication, both in whole and or on a regular basis. I wanted to see if you could give any tips for a loved one to try and get someone that needs medication to be compliant with their regimen on a regular basis without overstepping your bounds or being too pushy or being
it's not like addiction.
The caregiver.
It's not like addiction where you have to kind of let people get to their own level with it, because the illness blocks their insight. They blocks their ability to see what's happening. And it's characteristic of bipolar disorder mania that this is the case. And part of it is people kind of like being in that manic state. That's part of it.
Oh, she loves it. Loves it. Yeah. Absolutely loves it.
Yeah. And the other part is they don't like some of the side effects of the medication. So one approach is to go, hey, look, this is getting dangerous. Let's get better pharmacotherapy. Let's get something that really works for you that you're not unhappy with. What is she taking now? What is she supposed to be taking?
Oh, I can look at it. It's two giant boxes full of stuff for that along with other problems. But Raylar, Trintellix, I believe Lexapro, and then, you know, additional sleep medications, things like that.
Maybe could you ask if you could go in with her to see the psychiatrist?
You know, that's not a bad idea.
I would
we've both been involved in one another's, you know, sat in with therapists or with, you know, other professionals before. So
yeah. And just let them, and just raise the issue about compliance and fear of it. But man, that pharmacotherapy sounds a bit complicated. And she's on a lot of depression medicine. I'm wondering if that's flipping her into mania, and maybe she is manipulating her mania by skipping, say, whatever mood stabilizer she's on. So it's a concern, man. That's complicated. And
right. And then you add Adderall to the mix.
Oh boy. The Adderall, the sleeping meds, and all that stuff. Very, very concerning. So I think the way to do it is get more information and get in there with the and find out what that doctor's thinking. And if you don't have confidence in that doctor, you can always, you know, work with her or maybe finding somebody else. But first get in there and see what's going on.
Well, and I think one of the other problems as well is that it's coming from multiple providers.
Yeah.
So I don't think certainly don't think it's the same page or
none
is aware
of, that is
of
okay.
what,
none
what
of that
the other
is okay.
hand is doing.
Yeah, you got to take the whole box, take it into the psychiatrist, and show up with her, okay?
Okay.
All right, man. Good luck. Whew, that's a rough one. Jerry, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah. How's it going?
Hey.
Hey, so I saw pictures over the Christmas break, you know, you at the White House and taking pictures with Trump and all that. Just want to know how you felt. Were you nervous? Did you have a good time?
I was nervous. I was really pleased to get to know some of the people that are in the administration, sort of the close advisors and the secretary level, what should we call them? Representatives. So Secretary Azar, head of the HHS, such an impressive guy. I would say that was the highlight of my day, was getting to know him, hearing his thoughts, hearing, you know, how smart he is and his extensive background in healthcare and what he's planning to do. And this guy's on it. Number two, my second highlight was Ben Carson. I don't care what he gets a bad rap in the press. That guy knows what's up. He, you know, he's not a great speaker, but he is a excellent human being, and he's a good administrator. He knows what he's up against. He knows what he's trying to do, and he's smart. So please, everybody,
and he listens to you. According to what you said on the show yesterday.
Oh yeah, absolutely, listens carefully, and peer to peer kinds of listening, where it's like very efficient, very effective. And
awesome.
And the most bizarre part was being spoken to by the President of the United States from the stage. That was weird. He starts like, "Where's Drew?" I'm like, "I'm over here." So that was I did not expect any of that, and I was very nervous about doing a keynote, you know, at the White House. That's a big deal. But I do feel like mission accomplished. Like I got there, you know, the information I wanted to get across, and we'll see if they. Oh, there was another third person that I was very inspired by, which was the new homeless czar. That guy knows what's up too, and I'm anxious to see how effective he is and what he does. All right?
Awesome.
All right,
awesome. One more thing.
Yeah.
Are you getting any kind of backlash from people just because, you know, you take a picture with Trump and
absolutely.
People
and
go crazy.
And I expected that, and I'm kind of agnostic to everything. You know, my thing is, hey, I just want to help people, and these guys are listening, and they're willing to make change. I'm going to talk to them. And so that's the way I look at it. I'm like Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian went in and made change in the
prison reform,
and she's my model. I never thought I'd say that, but I'm Kim Kardashian. Thanks, Jerry.
Before we get to line three, which is a topic we touched on moments ago, I have to say, listening to your speech at the White House, which was very well done,
thanks.
I was getting PTSD as I listened and you were having trouble with the slides not being right. I was reaching around trying to figure out how I could fix them. I was 4,000 miles away, but I was like, oh my God, this is the White House. I'm screwing this up. It was a weird experience.
There's no Adam Carolla there at the White House screaming at you.
But whether Adam's there or not, I want to get my job right. And it was just a weird experience.
Yeah. At the beginning, there was a whole mix.
You were a little off and I could tell it was flustering you and I wanted to help.
Oh, I'm so used to that, the technical problems. And there was a kid in my eyesight who was actually writing this stuff. I felt terrible for him. James, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, man. What's up?
So I had a question for you.
Yeah.
I was diagnosed with HIV AIDS, actually, about 6 years ago. By the time they had caught it, like, my immune system was, like, depleted. My CD4 count was like 120 something. I've been on my regimen and I've bounced back. So I'm technically undetectable at this point.
Great. What do you mean? What do you mean technically?
What's that?
What do you mean technically undetectable? You either are undetectable.
Well, I mean, okay. So I'm undetectable.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like some parts of my body are failing a little bit here and there. Like I'm not the same. I keep growing like cysts here and there.
Like boils?
And,
like boils?
What do they call them? Dermoid?
Dermoid cyst. Interesting. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But there's other things too. But all my care provider does is just like, makes me get my labs done and just refills my prescriptions. I'm on Genvoya now. Mm-hmm. I was on Stribild.
Mm-hmm. Why'd they switch you?
Yeah. Because they told me that's what I needed to do. That's all I know.
Right. So there's two things occur to me. One is there's a communication breakdown between you and your caretakers, and I don't know why that's happening. They should be informing you of what they're doing. My thought is that since your viral load is zero, I think what they're – I, again, trying to read between the lines here. I suspect what they're thinking is that these side effects, these experiences you're having, the dermoids and whatnot, the breaking down what you're calling, I think they're thinking that's from your medication, that it's literally a medication side effect, not your HIV. And so they're trying ways, right?
So the cysts only happen like once I moved from Stribild to Genvoya. Mm-hmm. And the one reason that I was told, and there was only one, is because apparently there was something with Stribild about like bone density loss and whatnot.
Yep.
And so they moved me over to Genvoya, which is basically the same medicine.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like it was like a patent thing. Like they just
that's the other thing I'm worried about, that somehow you're getting limited choices because of some resource restriction. Are you in a AIDS project kind of setting where there's lots of resources available?
I belong to Kaiser.
Ah, see? So that's concerning. That's concerning. And not that Kaiser, anything wrong with Kaiser. They often do very, very good care. But I'm wondering if that's limiting your options. What if you were to go to an AIDS project, you know, and I know the one in Los Angeles is just incredible. And you can get
– I'm up here in the Bay Area.
No, I understand. I would think Bay Area would have the same. I don't know for sure. But, I mean, my God, that was ground zero for the epidemic. And see –
It would just have to be like in-network because I can't really afford like –
My point is many of the AIDS projects are free. And there's lots of resources. I would look more into the AIDS resources. Like, is there an AIDS project that would give you a free medical evaluation, and just get another evaluation of what your care is? Have them just look at things, look at your records, and see if they agree with what's going on here. Something isn't quite right, and it sounds like you should avail yourself of more care, right? And I understand you're but look at AIDS projects. Or maybe even call APLA, AIDS Project Los Angeles, and ask them if there's somebody they could refer you to up there that would evaluate you for free. It's usually you can get stuff for free. You can even get drugs for the medication for free sometimes. So I'm hopeful. It's not as though I'm going, oh, it's not likely to happen. No, I'm hopeful that you could find somebody to do just an evaluation of your care. And they may, be prepared. They may evaluate it and go, hey, you're getting great care. It's just this is the best we can do.
Yeah, because even like these drugs aren't cheap. Like
I know.
If I didn't have if I didn't have anything like we're talking like $100 a day.
I know. I get it. And I'm not saying this to disparage Kaiser in any way. I'm just saying that, you know, having a new set of eyes on things might be a good thing. Let me know how that works out, James. I appreciate the call. This is Andre. Andre, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew. How you doing, man?
Good. What's happening?
Hey, it's layered. I'll try and keep it brief. So over the new year, my mom had an incident with my younger brothers and her husband. Definitely focused on alcohol. When they kind of enable each other, and when she drinks too much, she tends to get super emotional.
Okay.
So my sister is kind of similar to her in the sense that they have strong personalities. So I feel like when my mom calls me when something happens, it's just the emotional barf onto me, and it kind of adds weight onto me. So my mom and my stepdad are avid drinkers, and they really shouldn't be drinking as much as they do, but they do. And I feel like in a way they kind of enable each other.
Okay. They're using buddies.
Something bad happens.
Using buddies.
Exactly. But they've been doing it for so long. So I don't know where I kind of fit in to kind of stymie this particular behavior. And I don't really think there is much of anything I can do.
I think you're right.
So
here's what you can do. There's two things you can do if you want. One is you can bring it up to them and point out to them the consequences of their behavior on you and how it's making you feel and, you know, what it's like for you, number one. And then number two, actually the more important thing, is you can go to Al-Anon. Go to Al-Anon, get a sponsor, and have a place to go to get support for dealing with this.
Right, right.
And believe me, the dance you do with them will change if you go to Al-Anon. It will.
I mean, granted, I'm not a spring chicken either. Like, I've had my runs in with alcoholism. Like, I got a DUI not like 5-6 years ago, and I did Al-Anon, and it really opened my eyes.
You did Al-Anon or AA?
Oh, I'm sorry. AA.
Okay, well, do Al-Anon too, because that's another piece of the story you're living with.
So what would you say in the sense of like? And it gets more complicated because my sister is so forceful into it. I feel like she's kind of pulling me into her plan.
Go to Al-Anon.
Like, as far as how to deal with mom.
I get it. Go to Al-Anon. You need somebody in your corner. I think about the metaphor is, I have two metaphors. One is a fighter who needs a coach in the corner, right? You need someone there for you. Or the other metaphor is the plant and the little shop of horror. You know, the little shop of horror with the plant that says, feed me, talks. You know, whenever you go near that plant in the musical or in the movie, it eats you. And that's the way addiction is. If you go near it, it sucks you into its pull. It's an interpersonal disease. It's a relational disease. It takes advantage of all the resources that the identified patient has in his or her life, both in terms of their own brain and also the brains around them. It pulls them into it. And the only way you break that spell, much like in the Little Shop of Horrors, you have to have somebody pull you out. The Ariadne's cord, we call that. Somebody to pull you out of the plant so you don't go in. And that's the sponsor in Al-Anon. That's what you got to do, man. I got to wrap it up, Andrew. I appreciate the call. Thank you all for being part of this. Appreciate the calls. And again, drdrew.com for the family of pods there. Drdrew.tv, if you sign up there, I'll give you a blast on Sunday when we put out our live show, which is interactive questions like this. And you can call in and ask me more in real time, real live, on a streaming show. You can check it out on Facebook Live and sign up on Periscope. And we'll hope to see you there. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.